Blog Talk Radio.
...of KJMA's practice of constructive community reporting, we have invited Dr. Khalid Mohammed, Minister...
That's what we have to learn in the North. Negroes have to learn to stick together.
God damn it, I wanna be free. Sick of the Philadelphia police that's fucking with me. Littlefield nigga, with a warrior's heart. So many house niggas around me, so I gotta play it smart. Niggas are scared of revolution, they still walking in the dark. Having a jolly old time, slipping slave masters fast. But just yesterday, they ripped my grandmoms apart. Why I burn your fucking flag, you shouldn't have stole this from the start. Ah, let me calm down, man, I'm getting vexed. Two options left, it's freedom or death. I'm a field nigga, just waiting to kill my master. When I blast TD Jakes and these weak-ass pastors, no good bastards. Just pussy in your boots. Black cops love to crack us so they can't play the spook. Leave you laying with no shoes and a spin in a juice. No, your teachings are fluke and I'ma tell them.
We got to learn in the North. Negroes have to learn to stick together. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
I'm a field nigga. Hot day in the black sun, picking this here cotton. Masters feeding us this here hog, and our brains are just rotten, and we forgotten.
What?
Motherfucker, keep it real. The white man is the devil, and all I wanna do is kill. Mother Goose is a whore, and I shot Jack and Jill. Niggas talking ice chains, but ice chains up on your brain. While you're getting your dick sucked with a white bitch up on the hill, you stay chill. Megan tortured for a week, trying to remove white supremacy, you still bowing at their feet. This girl was made to eat rat shit, white bitches and dog shit. She was cut with a razor and you still talking all that hog shit. Have you ever stopped and wondered why we always get the scraps? And we working our asses off, getting scammed and getting slapped. Every day I'm getting death threats, so you know my phone is tapped. You idolize the itemized with no spine up in your back.
We the black.
Because we talking about freedom for everybody. We not talking about integration. We talking separation for our own black salvation. Black power. And when we talking about black power, it only means to define, develop, and defend what is in the best interest of black people, huh? See, I'm a field nigga. I pray for my master's death every day. Death to white supremacy. And we can't be free. Nobody will be free, goddammit. You can't beg for freedom. You can't march for freedom, can't sing for freedom, can't dance for freedom, can't shoot hoops or score touchdowns for freedom. God damn it, you got to shed some blood for freedom. You got to feel it in the very urges of your soul, black people. I'm a field nigga, huh?
Yeah.
Do you?
That's what we got to learn in the North. Negroes have to learn to stick together.
It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
Black power, black power, black power, and more black power to my people. It's your brother, your soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli. And I'm happy to be able to broadcast live from right here in the hells and smells of North America. This is a privilege. It's a joy. I count this among the many esteemed honors to be able to talk to you, my sisters, brothers, and some others from this bold revolutionary radio broadcast called Black Power Radio. Want to send you greetings from the national body, the National Central Committee, the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And first, and got to get in there, them greetings from our national chairman, the General Hashim Nzinga, who is crisscrossing the road and traveling right now. and making them moves. And, you know, he was on the phone earlier with some NBA players and this, that, and the third. I know that you all have been keeping up with what's going on. He's making his moves and talking to them and organizing them. And we got to talk about what's happening in the Black Nation, what's happening in the community, what's happening in the world. I mean, it is so, so much that is going on, and there's really so much to talk about. I mean, we have to stretch this out and really get into it. Of course, if you have listened to our show before, you know that we are a show about solutions. It's not a show that we just want to vent. We want to just kick up a noise. We want to just be heard. We're a show about solutions and on-the-ground organizing. And so we want to connect nationwide on this line. And you'll be able to call in at 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447, as we'll network and we'll globally network and be talking to you live and be hearing from our national spokeswoman, and probably our national chairman may call in from the road. I know he's been trying to get some of the NBA people coordinated and on, and got a call from Brother Ice Cube, and so much that's happening. We'll also talk a little later to Brother Mark and Black Paralegals for Justice, and that great promoter and that great concert organizer, that man who was there for Michael Jackson and there for so many other entertainers. We'll hear from, hopefully, Brother Leonard Rowe, who we told you that the feds had moved on him because he had put some liens on some property that was owned by some so-called Jews. And with no warrant, none of that, they moved on him. And so he's in a legal battle, and we're in a legal battle to get our brother Leonard Rowe free. And so we'll be talking about that and talking about much more. That's right there underneath that category called political prisoners. We'll talk about that and talk about the birthday of our brothers, Mumia Abu-Jamal, Comrade Mumia Abu-Jamal, who just celebrated his birthday. And salute to you, comrade. And I know you holding the line. Holding the line where you are. And so much more. But brothers and sisters, of course, we give thanks to our ancestors who helped us to be where we are. I'm talking about Black men and women who are the mothers and fathers of civilization, who are the architects of society, the first to establish government and rule. And we give thanks to them who became our warriors and freedom fighters, that even though we were stripped of our names, language, and culture as a people, we still managed to maintain our warrior prowess, and we're able to still fight and continue on. And so the greats like Shaka Zulu and Yasantiwa and so many who have come before us to show us that warrior example, those who did it here in the hills of North America, like the Deacons for Defense, and those who did it like the UNIA and Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and those who did it like the Nation of Islam and the Black Panthers of the 60s and the 70s and Black Liberation Army and RAM and SNCC and all of those. And salute and shout out to Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H-Rap Brown, and those other political prisoners who are locked down now in the concentration camps of the United Snakes of America. America has refused to acknowledge that it has political prisoners. And that's something that over the course of the next couple of weeks we'll be driving home to you, what a political prisoner is. And we'll talk about why America as a corporation, not a country, but America as a corporation, why it does not want to acknowledge the fact that she has and it has political prisoners. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what happened to the Move 9 and how they dropped the bomb. Wilson Good and them dropped a bomb, a physical bomb, on those brothers and sisters, and how Pan Africa and them are still pushing in the cause today. We're all connected in this, and so I want you to understand that we're all in this together. Black man and black woman, wherever you at, under the sound of my voice in North America, we are in this together, and we're in a fight for survival. As you clearly witnessed, that even though the times have advanced in terms of technological advancement, as you may have saw on my Facebook post the other day, I said that, you know, 50 years ago, they were using mimeograph machines to copy things, you know what I mean? And I had to go through that hand cranking process. Some of you super youngsters don't even know nothing about a mimeograph machine, But those of you who've been there know what I'm talking about. Once upon a time, they were using 8-track. They were using cassette tapes. Now all of that is phased out. That is phased out in America because the technology has advanced. Right now, we can talk to the world with the click of a mouse and the click of a button, the push of a finger. We can talk to the world. And so even though technology has advanced, and even though many of you, brothers and sisters, now are able to work certain jobs, as you know, Sister Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, who we heard in the intro with National Field Marshal King Samir Shabazz giving that song called Field Nigga. We heard him teaching so many of them, James Farmer and James Meredith and so many others who have made a sacrifice for us to be able to sit down in a restaurant and eat with our families or go to a movie theater and be able to enjoy a movie unaccosted, God willing, with our families or without being kept out because we're black. So many have paid that price. So even though the times have advanced and we are not in the 30s or 40s or 50s or the 60s and that civil rights movement or that black power era of that time, and we're in 2014, which is considered to be the information age since the early 2000s, advent of the internet and the information highway. Even though we have advanced to this point, I'm here to tell you that ain't nothing changed when it comes to the institutionalized racism and the way that black men and women are treated here in the hills of North America in various parts of the world. And that is a damn shame. It's a damn shame that Rosa Parks had to go through all that she went through and had to face ridicule and be spit on and all the stuff that she went through. And here we are in 2014 and we're still dealing with some of the same issues that they dealt with then. Now, we may not have the Montgomery bus boycott like they did. You may not want to enact a bus boycott like they did back then, but you still have to deal with the same issues that James Meredith and all of them were dealing with. We still have to go through some things for 2014 in order for it to be a change. How do we know? Because now you all have heard the voice, the alleged voice, of the Los Angeles Clippers owner, Donald Sterling. And here is Donald Sterling on the phone, we'll say allegedly Donald Sterling on the phone talking to his mulatto, his mixed girlfriend, who she says she's mixed with black and I think Puerto Rican. She's mixed up in there. And so he's talking to her, asking her why she has to parade her affiliations with black people, black men, you know, what he called minorities, why she has to parade this on her Instagram. And he said he had been getting calls, that calls had been coming in to him about his girlfriend, you know, running around with these black men. And she says she go on to talk about how she had admired, you know, she ran into Irving Magic Johnson and the NBA legend, and, you know, she admired him, as many do and many did during his heyday, and even admire him now for his business sense and entrepreneurial sense. And she goes to talk about how she just took a picture because he was somebody, he is somebody who she admires. And he goes to berate her as to why do you have to display it and why do you have to show it among all your friends? Why do you have to do all of this? And they get off into an exchange about changing skin. She's sitting here apologizing for the hue of her skin, just shameful in 2014, apologizing. She's saying she wished she could change her skin and this, that, and the third. And you know, reminding him and asking him, do you know that I'm mixed with black and all of this? And he's telling her, I don't care nothing about none of that. You know, you can do what you want to do behind doors. He even goes as far as to say you can sleep with him if you want to. I'm talking about some freaks, brothers and sisters, some freaks. He says you can sleep with him even if you want to, but don't put it on your page. He goes further in to say that there's a culture in America. I'm paraphrasing. There's unwritten rules in America, you know, that basically we are supposed to be at odds with each other, and that, you know, the Mexicans and the Jews and the blacks and the this and the that, and that, you know, we have to abide by the code. Now, here's what I want to say here. I look forward to all of you all's comments on this particular issue here. I want to say here that, you know, I'm not as angry as some of my family is with Donald Sterling. I'm not as angry with him for his comments, for what he said, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I would rather know where my enemy stands than have someone smiling in my face and beguiling with me and all of this, shaking hands and all of these niceties, while at the same time they're finding an opportunity to stick the knife further in my back. I'd rather have someone who say, hey, nigga, I don't like you. I don't want to be around you. I can't stand your thick nose. I can't stand your broad nose, your thick lips, your coarse hair. I can't stand any of that. I don't like it. It makes me sick at nighttime. I'd rather them say that. I'd rather them come out and be more honest and say that than those who are smiling in your face every day on the job, and those who are laughing with you and giggling with you, some of you sharing beers with them and cookouts and barbecues and all kind of things that you're doing, and then they go back home to their families or they go amongst their peer group and they say, that nigga, you know, they talk bad about you and tell little crazy jokes about you and talk all kind of weird talk about you, but then in your face, they're laughing and smiling with you. See, we've seen it too many times. If you can remember, us in the new party, we've seen, you know, the Anthony Hills who have had their friendships with them, and then when the drinks get to flowing or something personal gets to happening, then you find an Anthony Hill drug for over a mile behind the pickup truck down the roads of South Carolina. We've seen it too many times with the James Byrds, and we've seen it too many times with these recent events. We've seen it too many times. So I would rather, I'm just telling you my opinion. You can tell me yours. I would just rather someone tell me straight out how they feel and what's on their mind and where they stand, and then we can know where each other stand and do what's best from there. I'm going to tell you why I'm disappointed at. I am disappointed organizational efforts of the black teammates on the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm disappointed at this supposed silent protest where, you know, they're flipping the jerseys inside out and wearing the black socks. And I know some of you who saw me earlier, you say, well, you know, what should they have done? You know, and I recognize that these are brothers who have jobs and they're working their jobs and they feel like they got to work their jobs, but damn it, you got to make a stand in North America, black man and black woman. You're going to have to make a stand in North America. And we're just talking about athletics right now. I'm talking about straight up athletics. I ain't even just talking about the whole scope of black America. We're just talking straight NBA. The NBA, the black players in the NBA will have to make a stand and really take a stand, because what the hell you did was pathetic. But what I will say, I'll give you credit for trying, but I really blame the organizers. I blame those of us who call ourselves organizers being first self-critical for not showing you brothers and sisters. If there's some sisters out there that need to organize in the same fashion, I blame us for not showing you how to organize in the proper fashion. New Black Panther Party, we got to take that one on the chin. We got to take that one straight on the chin, because if we say we taking the vanguard position in all aspects of black life and black struggle, then the NBA players, the black NBA players, should have known how to do a proper protest to hit them bastards where it hurts and get the message across and get the mission across and rally some other teammates and those on the coaching staff and everywhere else to come together in a unified effort. That's the fault of the Vanguard right there. That is the fault of the Vanguard movement right there. And I'm just going to say, we're going to take that one on the chin. And others of you out there who say that you're activists or progressives out there or revolutionaries out there, you got to take that one on the chin. Because that stuff was pathetic. I mean, damn, covering up the damn logo and flipping your damn jersey inside out, but you ain't going to say a damn thing. Hell no, brothers and sisters. Hell no, brothers and sisters. That ain't how I got to go, because at the end of the day, that Donald Sterling is still going to be a rich racist bastard, a rich racist cracker. He's still going to be the same. Whether you flip your jersey on or you flip your jersey off or inside or outside or you cover up the logo, he's still going to be the same, and he's still going to have the same feeling about the damn thing. You got to get involved in 2014, and you got to get involved in a real way that really means something. But we got to take that on the chin, because there is not enough visibility for brothers and sisters when they want to take the example of the strong. There's not enough example on how to protest. What happened to those days when the athletes knew how to protest and knew how to stand up? See, it took a Black Panther Party. It took a SNCC. It took a RAM. It took a CORE to show a Muhammad Ali how to throw his title in the damn river. It took a Nation of Islam to show him how to throw his title in the river and say, I'd rather throw the title in the Ohio River in Louisville, Kentucky, than be a slave and a tool for the white man and a fool for the oppressor. See, it took that kind of stand, and they were making them kind of stands back then. Didn't matter how much money they was going to lose or what kind of contracts they would lose. Didn't make no difference when, you know, you saw the Olympic picture and them brothers put up that black fist to show solidarity with the black struggle. Didn't make a difference what the repercussions is. But in 2014, brothers and sisters are worried about the repercussions. You won't move, you won't organize, and you won't do a for real protest that hurts because you're scared of some repercussions. And it's the same thing on your jobs locally where you live. Some of you won't stand up because you're scared. You're scared you're going to lose your job. You're scared people are going to talk about you in your city. You're scared you're going to be disconnected from family and friends. And I'm here to tell you, you've already been disconnected. You've already lost your job. If you're so scared to move and so scared to organize and so scared to be yourself, you have already lost it in 2014. Because that kind of movement won't get us anywhere. And then to move along further, Chamillionaire, the famous rapper. You know, those of you who remember that song, they see me rolling. You remember that? That's Chamillionaire. He had come out with a video. He was live streaming, and they were talking about his time when he had met the Michael Jordan. And he was saying that he was, you know, like many of us, he was a fan of Michael Jordan's, and, you know, he wanted to talk to Mike and, you know, as the commercials say, be like Mike at one point, but he just wanted to take a picture at this time. And they were in a crowd, was nothing going on. And, you know, he went to talk to Mike and told Mike about how he had made his way to him and got there, you know, and as a child would buy the sneakers and all kind of stuff. And he said that Michael Jordan, I have to say allegedly because I was not there, but he says allegedly that Michael Jordan says, I don't take pictures with niggas. I want you all to listen to that language good. Michael Jordan, allegedly, you know who I'm talking about, tongue out, dunking from the free throw line. Michael Jordan says that Chameleon S say he told him, I don't take pictures with niggas. Now, with all the violence that has happened surrounding Michael Jordan's sneakers over the years, his tennis shoes, for those of you in other areas, you know, the violence that's happened over his sneakers and the support that, you know, black people give to his sneaker and to give to Nike in general. We talked about this last radio show that, you know, as you heard Dr. Dennis Kimbrough break down that black people support Nike more than any other people. And so you see now that Michael Jordan is, you know, disconnected with all the support that we've given him and his products and, you know, his clothing lines and all of that that comes with that emblem. Here's a young rapper, saying that he just wants a picture with Michael Jordan, and Michael straight up fronted him off and say, no, I don't take pictures with niggas. How does that make you feel? Chicago, Detroit, D.C., Florida, Ohio, California, Indiana, Kentucky, wherever you are, how does that make you feel that your children, many of your children and family members right now want a pair of Jordans? They want them J's. You got rappers out there, Nelly's and the other ones out there. I forget who made the exact song. I think Nelly did the Air Force Ones. But one of them did them J's on my feet. What's that? The brother, the 3-6 Mafia, put that song out with that beast, Miley Cyrus. J's on my feet, okay? And so you got these rappers out there. They're promoting the image. They're promoting the product, the brand, the Jordan. And here they are pushing it and pumping it so that your children and the youth will go buy it wholesale and keep him and his family and his white wife rich. But yet, when a young man comes to say he want to just take a picture, that he says, no, I don't take pictures with niggas. And when he said that, believe me, he's not just talking about no chameleon head. Believe me, there's too many people who have come out on Michael Jordan. Craig Hodges, who played for the Bulls, and others have come out on him and just exposed him. There's a video that's on YouTube right now. I just saw it the other day, talking about Michael Jordan hates black people. They say he does no charity work. He does nothing to help the black cause, nothing to help the community. It's all out there. So I'm asking, why do black people continue to support those who mean them no good? Not just Michael Jordan, but I mean in general. Why do we continue to give our monies, our hard-earned monies, to those who do not deserve your support? Chicago, an ethnic cleansing is happening in your city. Ethnic cleansing is happening in your city. Where's the Michael Jordans at? I just saw something where Brother Common and Kanye West are using their foundation to give, I think it was 21,000 jobs, something to that effect, and that's good. But where are the Michael Jordans? Where are those who can go above and beyond and they wouldn't even feel it at all? Where are them at? Where you at? But yet, black people line up, stay out all night long, camp out in front of the stores and do all kind of crazy stuff. Young men pulling weapons on each other and just to take the shoes off another black man because the song from the brother from 3-6 and Miley Cyrus said you gotta have J's on your feet. This gotta make you feel some kind of way. And this is the kind of attitude that is driving our people crazy in North America. This whole attitude of not loving self and then having rich white people on top of you talking about they don't love you, they don't want nothing to do with you unless it's behind the closed doors or you just making them some money. He came out with another statement talking about how many blacks that he employees and all of this type of deal. You know, he even went as far, I'm talking about Donald Sterling, went as far as to say, you know, don't even bring magic to the game. Damn, Beast, don't even bring magic to the games. Magic Johnson, an NBA legend. An NBA legend, this Beast say, don't even bring him to the game. I mean, it's crazy. So it's bigger than that. What it shows you is that no matter how much money you have in America, you're still a slave in some of their eyes. You're still a slave in their eyes. You're still a boy in their eyes. You're still that nigga, that coon in their shine in their eyes. And whether they smile in your face, whether they laugh with you, share a beer with you, whatever the case is, or work with you, they still feel the same way that their foreparents felt. While many of you out there are interested in this utopia, you interested in the integration in this utopia, the mindset of the white man and woman has not changed against you. If it has changed, why is the situation still the same? See, I posed that question to you. Because, you know, the conditions that our foreparents fought against, we still fighting against them in 2014. So how is it that the conditions are institutionalized, that the wholesale warehousing of black men and women and brown men and women and red men and women is at an all-time high in America? The prison industrial complex is on a privatized market at an all-time high. Homelessness at an all-time high in America, more so than the 60s and the 70s, but yet you are interested in a utopia where we can all get along and just ignore the issues. How many times do these issues have to continue to pop up over and over again? See, as I said, I'm not mad at Donald Sterling. I know Donald Sterling is a no-good devil. See, I know this. The Honorable Khalid Muhammad taught us this in the new Black Panther Party, that Donald Sterling and the rest of them are just some no-good devils. So I'm not even upset at a devil being a devil. That doesn't bother me. I am upset at us not being ourselves. See, now you got to look at the proposal of Brother Larry Johnson. Y'all remember Larry Johnson, another NBA great, NBA legend. He has proposed that there be an all-black league. Did y'all see that? An all-black league. He wants to just have it with us. Now, I'm interested to see the kind of backlash that he's going to get. I'm interested to see the Uncle Ruckuses from the NBA and other areas that come out and criticize Larry Johnson, Brother Larry Johnson, for his stance, his really black nationalist stance of having an all-black NBA league. But guess what? Once upon a time, there was an all-black league. When you couldn't play, you had to make your own league. Just like when they didn't want you in their church, you had your own church. Didn't want you in their school, you had your own school. Didn't want you in their hospital, you had your own hospital. You made your own. But see, once the integration came, once what they called the civil rights was fought for and you fought for integration into their system and society, our people stopped wanting their own. That silent protest, brothers and sisters, really pissed me off. Silent, what the hell do you have to be silent about? And you are not wanted in not just the NBA. Let's cut that crap. You are not wanted in America. If you can't tell by what happened with the case of Michael Dunn and Jordan Davis and what happened with the case of George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin and what happens with the countless cases of police brutality and misconduct and the courts let these bastards off, if you can't tell that you're not wanted here, something is wrong with you. You have to fix your mind and get your mind right and focus on what's really going on, because they show you every day. And it's just like being in an abusive relationship where the person is abused all the time, abused every day. And every single day that person who's abused keeps going back to the abuser and saying, well, they're going to change, they're going to stop, they're going to get it together. You just like that black man and black woman. The more these Donald Sterling come out and tell you that they don't like you, the more you run back to them instead of trying to do something for yourself. The more you run back to them instead of going to the revolutionary program like the New Black Panther Party and starting to build and organize for self-determination. Now, it's not isolated. I want to say this because guess what? Those like Donald Sterling, they have friends. They have people that they associate with. They have people that they go golfing with, people that they sit on their boats and yachts with, and people that are in their peer group. And guess what? There are more who feel the same way. There are more who have the same thoughts. There are more who have the same kind of hatred for black men and women and black life. It is no different, brothers and sisters. It is what your four parents went through. It is just done in a sly, slick way. You know, you didn't expect them to always have to want to beat you with the whip, did you? You didn't think that they were always going to want to chase you down because you're running for freedom or have to fight you on the plantation type atmosphere. They didn't want to do that for the rest of their lives. They brought in Willie Lynch. Willie Lynch was a business consultant on how to make the business of slavery more effective, how to run the slave economic enterprise without having to physically be there to brutalize you with the cat of nine tails, or what they commonly refer to as the whip. Now, so what you have, when you look in your community with black-on-black violence, you have, as the Honorable Khalid Muhammad describes, you have black men and women who are on automatic, systematic, remote control, where now when we see another black man or black woman, we automatically believe that that's the enemy. We automatically believe that that's someone who's out to get us, that's someone who's out to hurt us, that's someone who's out to do us wrong, that's someone who I can't trust, because it's on automatic, remote control. The slave syndrome is on automatic, remote control in black America. So now we do damage to ourselves without someone having to direct us to do damage directly. Nobody has to tell a black man who hates himself to go shoot another black man. No one has to tell a black woman who hates herself to go shoot another black woman or set a black man up or do the type of things that we do to each other. No one has to tell us this. It's on automatic control, and the system is running itself. This is all connected to the way that we've been treated from the time that we've been here in North America, to the poverty that we've experienced in North America, to the hunger that our people have experienced in North America, to the joblessness and the capitalism that we've experienced here in North America. It is all connected. You got to put the dots together. I'm trying to tell you, you got to put the dots together and wake up in 2014, and look at this, the NAACP, in case you didn't hear that, the National Advancement of Colored People, they were going to give a Lifetime Achievement Award to Donald Sterling. Lifetime Achievement Award to Donald Sterling. This is the Los Angeles branch of the NAACP, that's like giving the station owner a Lifetime Achievement Award for having the most slaves. I mean, what in the hell did Donald Sterling do that is worth honoring for a lifetime? Somebody please call in and break that down to me. What could Donald Sterling possibly do to deserve a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NAACP, the Los Angeles branch? I want to make it clear, Los Angeles branch. Now, I do believe that the national branch of the NAACP. I do believe that they put pressure on the L.A. branch to withdraw that. And I don't know if they're going to go forward with that, but why in the hell was that considered in the first place? NAACP, how could you ever put that on the agenda to give a no-good bastard like Donald Sterling a Lifetime Achievement Award? See, there's something wrong with these black organizations out here. Some of them, some of you, you're crazy as hell out there. Something is wrong with you that you just want to bend over and give evil an opening. You just want to be seen by these white people. You just want to be hugged on and loved by these white people. It's called Stockholm Syndrome, where you love your enemy to the point to where they can really do no wrong, you know. So a man like Donald Sterling can straight up tell you he don't even want you at the game. So, yeah, we say, yes, sir, boss, let me figure out how to give you an award. You know, this old Stockholm Syndrome Negroes running around in the NAACP that just want to award white people. They ain't even did a damn thing. They ain't did nothing to deserve an award at all, but you just have to find, you got to make some kind of way to kiss your oppressors behind. It's crazy as hell. It's crazy as hell, and as Dr. Khalid Muhammad would say, it's the state of the race. It's the state of the people, state of our nation, where the slavery has gone so deep into our mental processes that we would do everything in our power to please white people and nothing to please ourselves. We got to build up for ourselves, black men and black women. That's what Minister Malcolm X was talking about when he was talking about black nationalism and how you had to put your petty differences to the side and even put your ideologies in the closet or spiritualities in the closet and come out on being black. Put that old bickering between the Muslim and the Christian and the Christian and the Hebrew and the Hebrew and the Buddhist and the agnostic, all that in the closet and come out on the principle of being black and that we got to survive, see? That's what I'm talking about. That's what Minister Malcolm X was talking about. He was talking about putting petty differences to the side and attacking the real issues, because if you haven't noticed, we are still being killed at an alarming rate. In every city in America, every so-called ghetto is infested with crime, infested with drugs, infested with violence, infested with savagery. I'm talking about infested with filth, but you have refused to ask yourself the question, who put the infestation there? How did crack cocaine get into the ghettos of America? Who brought in the guns? Who brought in the weaponry? Who is it that is continuing to warehouse our people in these penitentiaries? Who's doing it to us? Who is it that's causing these issues? And why does it continue? Now, if we look at the Black Panther Party, for an example, I just want to show you all something here. Now, when the government decided that the Black Panthers of yesterday were a problem, and the Panthers, underneath Huey P. Newton's charge and Bobby Seale's charge, they started in 66. And no later than 74, at their peak, they were 5,000 members strong, I believe the records say. And that was their peak. No later by 74, they had dwindled down well into the hundreds. I think it was 500-something members, and it went from there on down into just a handful of members to where members on the East Coast had to send their posters and send their paperwork and your buttons and all that to the West Coast, to David Hilliard and them, and now they got it as memorabilia, and you can go and look at it as a tour and all this kind of thing. I mean, I'm talking about a 5,000-member strong organization that had international notoriety and solidarity amongst other groups and all kind of even what they call white leftists and all kind of stuff. And by no later than 74, no less than 6-7 years later, they were already decimated to being just a 100-something member group, and it dwindled down from there to where now many of them are just relishing in the history, and they can tell you the war stories, but there's no active movement like that in today's time under that name. We had to restart it in 89, and the banner of the Panther had to fly in 89. So I'm saying if the government can do that in just 6-7 years, and they deemed the Panthers of yesterday a problem, and they said that the food and breakfast program was the problem, that was the threat, that was the thing that they saw that made them the internal greatest threat to this country, then what about crack cocaine? What about in today's society the heroin? Heroin now taking the biggest boom it has taken in decades. And don't you think that this doesn't have anything to do with the wars in Afghanistan and all that that's happening? Don't you think it's not connected? That every time they have a war, there's a big drug boom in America and a big drug boom in the black community. It's all connected, brothers and sisters. So if they can decimate a 5,000-strong organization like the Black Panther Party in less than 7 years, then how come the war on drugs, which was started in the mid-80s, continues right now, 2018, present day, as we're talking right now, in your community, in your neighborhood, maybe your next door neighbor right now is on drugs, dealing drugs, or has a family member that is afflicted by drugs. You have a family member that is afflicted by drugs. I have family members that are afflicted by drugs. How come this battle has not ceased? How come the war on drugs has not been declared a victory from the U.S. government? It is because the U.S. government is behind the drug trade. It is behind the trade of heroin and poppy and the weed and marijuana and coke and all of that. They're involved in that. Look at the history. Look at the history, okay? And so you got to know what's going on. You got to know that you at war in America. You at war with those forces that make a mind like Donald Sterling, because really he's just a white, what they call 10%er. He's just a rich white man with his ideas and his ideology. But what about those who share his values, who can write laws on the books, who share his value, and they sit behind judge benches in black robes, and they sentence your babies and your children and you to exorbitant sentences that don't fit the crime? You know, what about Troy Davis, who was proven to be innocent? Proven to be innocent. Wasn't even in the scene and all kind of evidence that would have normally led to his freedom. And the state still executed him. What kind of mind was that that signed off on his death warrant? What kind of sick, twisted individual or individuals was it that knew that the evidence showed that Troy Davis was innocent, but still, because he was a black man and because they wanted to prove a point that a black man must die in America, that they still signed the death certificate and lethal injection that black man to his death? What about those who would not let Stanley Tookie Williams out of the holes and the bars, the deepness of the penitentiary? Who was it that wouldn't let him go out and change the criminal activity of the Crips, where it had lost its original purpose and lost its original savor? And, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger and all of them that would not let him come out of the jail because they found out he had been reading Blood in My Eye by George Jackson, former field marshal of the Black Panther Party. What kind of mind is that? That they hate black people so much, and that they hate the Panther organization so much, that they wouldn't let a black man come out who had said, if I can go out to the streets and just be free, that I'll turn around the violence from an organization that I helped to create and start, and that these youngsters will respect me. So you got to think about that, brothers and sisters. You got to think about an NAACP LA branch that will give a lifetime award to a white man for calling you names and filthy, degenerate language and says that he don't even want you at the games. And all we can do is a silent protest. All we can do is turn our jerseys inside out. All we can do is cover up the basketball logo at the center of the court, but still play the game. That's not going to get us anywhere, brothers and sisters. That type of action is just the same old, same old, same soup warmed up over again. That's all it is. And I'm going to take your calls. I want you all to get involved in this conversation. And we'll be joined by quite a few of you all and quite a few of our members. That number to call is 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. I also have to tell you that another black man has been shot by the Philadelphia Police Department. I should say Philadelphia Police Department. Shot down. And all he was doing was just delivering pizza. I don't know if you all heard about this story or have read this story, but he was working his job. And this is another black man who they say was wearing a hoodie. And there's something about these hoodies where these brothers, you know, are rocking these hoodies. And I mean, let me tell you, I got a couple of hoodies myself. I don't know if you all rocked them in that kind of weather when the weather was right for it, but I got hoodies. I mean, so, you know, this man rocking his hoodie, probably cold out there. He delivering pizza. He going back to his vehicle. And he gets stopped by some plainclothes officers. And the plainclothes officers automatically assumed that this black man was up to no good, that he was doing wrong, and they shot him. Y'all didn't hear what I just said. A black man who, and I want to repeat, an innocent black man, an unarmed black man, a black man who was simply delivering pizza in Philadelphia, shot by plainclothes officers, you know, because he's wearing a hoodie. And that's what that's all they could say he was doing, wearing a hoodie, coming away from the house. They say that, you know, they approached him, and now you know how it is. It may have been dark, we don't know, but you see two people coming up on him. He's a pizza man. He more than likely believed they were there to rob him. He more than likely believed that they were, you know, trying to stick him up for some money, as what happens to many who, you know, serve pizzas. And so he ran to his car and took off, you know, trying to escape what he believed was a robbery. And in that instance, they opened fire on him. Now, I want to make something clear to you all, that regardless to the circumstance, it is completely inappropriate for the Philadelphia police officers to open fire on a moving vehicle. Now, this is something that I've researched and something that is known on the books. It is illegal, and I'll use the term as well, inappropriate. It is inappropriate and against the policies, the stated written policy of the Philadelphia police to open fire like that at a moving vehicle. But guess what? These two officers, plainclothes pigs, did just that. Now, this is a 20-year-old black man named Philip Holland. And, you know, he worked for Slices and More Pizzeria and Grill, okay? And so, as I said, all he was doing was wearing a hoodie, delivering pizza, and they shot the black man. Now, I mean, when is enough enough? I mean, when is enough enough? I don't even think, let me be clear, I don't think there's enough of you out there in the radio listening audience in the black nation who are angry enough at the pigs. You are not angry anymore in 2014 at the police departments like we used to be mad or like our people used to be mad. You ain't mad no more. You ain't mad because you sitting up here buying the bait and taking the bait and saying that we our own worst enemy. You ain't mad no damn more. The police can just shoot us down in the streets and kill 20-year-olds who are just delivering pizza, happen to be wearing hoodies at that time, and all most people can say is, oh, isn't that sad? If you even say that. And according to what the reports are, they, of course, have to immediately launch an investigation in the Internal Affairs Division, but that don't mean nothing to us. That, you know, the Black Power General used to say, you know, and our national chairman says, you know, that's like asking Jesse James to inspect or investigate Frank James. I'm going to say it again. When you ask the police to investigate itself, or you go trying to go to the civil affairs unit and all these kind of units, that is like asking Jesse James to investigate Frank James or vice versa. That's just brothers investigating brothers, man. They live by that blue code. They're going to cover each other. They're going to cover each other. And this man is gravely wounded. He's gravely wounded. He had a round that hit him in the head and damaged his eyesight, and they don't know as of yet, but it may be very possible that he may lose his eyesight. He may be blind, brothers and sisters. He may be blinded simply for working his job, doing what they always tell you to do, get a job, make something out of yourself and all of this, just for working his job. He may be blind for the rest of his life, and who knows what else, other kind of dangers, you know, and things that he faces down the road. Who knows what kind of damages he has to deal with down the road. But guess what? It is okay in some of their eyes out there because guess what? He a black man. He's a black man. And so it's another nigga shot down. The police were doing their job. They had to have reasonable cause or probable cause. He had to be doing something wrong. Well, what was he doing wrong? What did Trayvon Martin do wrong? See, I'm not off of Trayvon Martin, and I'm not off of Jordan Davis. What did they do wrong? Black men in America can't walk down the street to go get something to eat and something to drink without being shot. You can't ride in the vehicle. Young black males can't ride in the vehicle with their friends, just bumping some tunes. You can't go deliver pizza. If you can remember, sister, I think her name's Renisha McBride, who got shot down just for knocking on the door, and others who needed help. What the hell can we do in America without being killed by these no good bastards? See, your attitude got to change. You got to look at it for what it is and know that you're at war in the hells and smells of North America for black survival. And if you got black babies, if you got young black males and young black females as children or teens, you got to be extra vigilant in America. As I prepare to take your calls, you got to be extra vigilant in America. If you have young children or young family members, cousins or nephews or nieces or whatever you got, you have to be very vigilant in America about what's happening to our babies, because guess what? It's not happening to anybody else's children. I don't care about how much cultural unity y'all talk about to me and how much we should all get along and all intertwine and all this. It is not happening to anybody else's children, nobody else's babies, nobody else's young boys and young men and young women have to go through this 20 years old shot down simply because he delivered a pizza in Philadelphia. Somebody got to answer for Brother Philip. Somebody has to answer for Brother Philip. Y'all hear me? Somebody has to answer for Brother Philip. It does not make sense. All these men unarmed. Trayvon Martin, unarmed. Jordan Davis, unarmed. So many others, unarmed. We can take you all the way back to Sean Bell and beyond him. Unarmed black men minding their business. One black man about to get married, and he's killed, dead, no longer on the scene, no longer on the planet. Why? Because the pigs, the police, have a law in their minds that they must shoot to kill black men and black women now on sight. On sight. And you weak old organizations ain't going to do a damn thing. And some of you weak ones in the new Black Panther Party ain't going to do a damn thing, but sit there and look at it and say, ain't that a shame? And I refuse to deal with you. I refuse to deal with you, but I refuse to allow you to be comfortable like that. I refuse to let anybody be comfortable with this kind of action that is happening against our people in America or anywhere. I refuse to let us be comfortable and die and be killed wholesale, or if we're not killed, we're warehoused in the penitentiaries on charges that sometimes are trumped up, or that the sentences do not equal the sentences given out to Caucasian people or other peoples. I refuse to let us be comfortable like that. This Donald Sterling should serve as a mighty wake-up call to you. It should serve, because, you know, you got people right now that want to be NBA players. I see you with your videos. You're doing all kind of crossovers, and, you know, you're breaking people's ankles and all kind of stuff with the ball. And you right now want to be in the NBA, but you not knowing that there's a Donald Sterling and other Donald Sterlings up at the top that view you as property. And they look at you just like the slaves on the auction block when they were bidding on their slaves. That's right. I'm talking about the NBA draft. I'm talking about the NFL draft. I'm talking about all them drafts, and even the U.S. military draft. All of that stuff. They look at you just like a slave on the auction block, looking at your physical characteristics and your strengths and all of that type of stuff, and your weaknesses and how they can make money off of you. And I'm trying to show you that nothing's changed. It's just industrialized and technologicalized now. It's more technology involved in the slavery. Now the slavery is viewed on YouTube. It's viewed on WorldStar. It's viewed on Facebook and Twitter. The slavery is viewed now through the internet and internationally on television, more so than yesterday. That's all you got. That's all you got is more technology. Let me take some calls here, because I'm telling you, this is crazy. We'll go into the first call. Your area code is 502-249-502-249. This is live with Black Power Radio. I'm talking about modern-day slaves, the Los Angeles Clippers and others. What do we do? Talk to us. Welcome in Black Power. 502-249, your microphone's open. You want to chime in on this modern-day slavery? 504-432, you're on live, Black Power Radio, talking about modern-day slaves. What do we do? How do we survive? How do we get ahead? Talk to us. Welcome in Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power, Brother Sean.
Black Power.
We need to do like with the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. We had all kind of examples, but black folks, we are followed then. When the leader go down, we disappear and do something else. We had leaders telling us what to do. If we would have stuck to that program, we would have been different people. And first of all, we need to get out of other people's culture, ways of doing things, and we need to go back to our old way, that African way of doing things. And first of all, I want to make a comment on that brother who got shot down in Philadelphia. If we were doing like what the Black Panther Party was doing, patrolling, maybe if they would have had a patrol, people that patrol and watch things, videotape, the pigs wouldn't have done that brother anything. The brother would still be alive if they had that in Stamford, Florida. Somebody would have came up on George Zimmerman, hey, pull guns out on him and say, hey, don't you shoot that brother down. So Trayvon Martin would have been still living if we had that.
Very,
just imagine if you go in white folks' area, let's say we try to harm their people, they got patrols. They got patrols in the area. So that's what we need to do. We need to start patrolling.
Ain't no doubt about it, black man. They what I will say is that is one, we got it, looking at it historically, and I'm thankful for your comment. Looking at it historically, them Panthers got neutralized with them patrols. And what happened, if you know that story, them going to the Capitol, I think it was in Sacramento, going to the Sacramento Capitol, and moving on what was called the Mulford Act. The Mulford Act really became known as the Panther Bill, where they had moved to de-arm the Panthers. And so the Panthers were unable to do them legal patrols like they were doing them, and it really kind of neutralized the Panthers in terms of them armed patrols. And so the Panthers had to move into other areas. I mean, they still made moves. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to even go into the phone on some of the things that they did. But just in terms of what they did in the open, it really slowed them down. And so today in 2014, we bear the brunt of that, to where that in some areas, not all, you know, some areas you got open carry states where they can, you know, you can have your stuff out in the open, have your stuff in the holster and all kind of deal. And if you got that in your state, then you roll with it and you organize them patrols the way that it got to be organized and move just like that. In other areas New York. And, huh?
Yeah. Or either, if we don't have the gun, I'm just saying, if it just was a bunch of people that was out and we video camera, have the video cameras with us and everything, got them on the phone and everything, the pigs would have stopped.
Very, very possible. Like I said, those are great hypothetical instances, and we gotta have more of it, which is the importance of why we must build this movement, Brother Harold, and that more people in of color have to get involved in the movement and what we're doing. More melanated people, you got to get involved in this, because we have to have a bigger reach and be able to do more in these cities. And I'm totally in agreement with you. Again, even though we have to bear the brunt of the Mulford Act and that open carry deal, it still doesn't mean we can't do a lot. There's a lot you can do, and there's a lot that you can do armed. You know, some things, of course, that we won't go on this air with, but, I mean, there's a lot that we can do. I would love to have been a black man. Let me say this on the air. I would love to have been as a black man there when Trayvon Martin was confronted by that no-good bastard George Zimmerman, and I would have loved to have had my stuff. I would have loved to have been one of them brothers who would have been there when he was trying to harm that young man, and he pulled his stuff or whatever happened, and in self-defense defended a Trayvon Martin from being murdered. I would have loved to have been one of them ones there, you know, when Jordan Davis was being fired on and legally in self-defense able to fire back and put down a devil like Dunn, like Michael Dunn, and send him straight into the cemetery in self-defense. I would have loved to have been there, you know, but those are great hypothetical situations. But in saying that, brother, there are situations now that we can avoid and we can stop now going forward into the future. And I'm interested on doing that and ways to do that more in every city in America. We must have a strong defensive unit and strong defensive units in America that will defend black people, that will defend black people and black life from attacks. And I even want to say against other black people, because, you know,
yes, sir.
We got to be clear that there are reactionary forces out there that, you know, unfortunately, you know, are preying on black life, or what we call parasitic forces out there that are preying on black life, and that is just as wrong. That's wrong to me, just like a racist like Michael Dunn is wrong to me as well. And so, you know, that goes for anybody who is trying to destroy black life and destroy the peace of our people. We have a right to defend it. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, and I'm gonna say this because I know they got other callers now. basically, when you said about the party had 5,000 people strong, I got this documentary in Los Angeles. It was a Blood, but he said he wanted to reorganize the Bloods into a political movement, and they had some of the Panthers out of Los Angeles. Now, at one time, the party was real big, but see, when they start coming out with these black exploitation movies, many brothers got away from the party. A lot of them wanted to be pimps. They wanted to be gangsters and stuff like that. So you got to watch what you look at on television, because on television, that's messing our people's minds up too. At one time, people wanted to be revolutionaries. That was the thing to be. But see, if this black exploitation stuff came out, that messed up a lot of our people's minds too. They wanted to be the pimps. They wanted to be thugs and stuff like that.
So what you think is happening in 2014, now you're talking about a period of time where at 12 o'clock the television went off, brother. You know, you saw the American flag on there, and then you heard a tone. Now, 2014, you're talking about 24-hour unlimited access to television.
This
basketball wives and, you know, the Real Housewives. Women married to medicine, all this stuff is out there 24 hours a day. So what do you think that's doing to our generations now compared to
black exploitation
film in the 70s?
Okay, the same thing. That stuff is messing our children's minds up. It's messing our children's minds up. They want to imitate that life. You know, they brought up into all this different kind of environment, and they want to do that. And that's not the way to go. That's suicide.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
That's suicide. That's suicide. We got to teach our people it's a better way. You know, I understand you want to you want to have nice things, but you can't sell your soul. It's the same thing when Tupac was talking about thug life. Many people thinking you want to be a thug. No, that was a movement. That was a movement. If people find out what that thug life was meant, many people back away from that. That was a movement.
Yeah. Tupac, rest in power, said he didn't get a chance to properly analyze, you know, to go into that movement. He hadn't properly figured out the plan, which was, you know, if I had a chance to go back in time and sit down with our young brother at that point, I would have dealt with him on that scenario to finish the plan, because he was unclear. He didn't have all the answers. He, at that time, when him and Dr. Mutulu Shakur, political prisoner, salute to that OG, him and them OGs put that thug life plan together, you know, that was just the beginning. It wasn't the finality, you know what I mean? And so they were still building with that and trying to put that together and make that a real reality. But his fame shot so much to the point, and, you know, with him being set up on sexual abuse charges and everything that he went through, they didn't get a chance to finish that. He couldn't finish it. And so ultimately what you had was a half of a plan that was unfinished, and that the people picked up, they picked up the negative aspect of it for the most part. You know, you hear thug, immediately you think about somebody trying to rob or somebody trying to take from you. And so it became a glorified gangsterism versus what they were after, which was a new form of black power. But it's still not too late, Brother Harold. We can still revitalize the movement and revitalize the plan today. And, in fact, our national chairman that is on his agenda, I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, we are going to organize very heavily within the next few months with the street tribes, street organizations in various cities, in particular in Chicago and in your area and other areas. And so that's something that all Panthers must be ready for, and that everybody concerned, you got to get involved with, that we have to go reaching out to our babies involved in the street life and involved in the reactionary thug life. We got to grab them, Brother Harold.
Okay. Well, all right, Brother Sean, Black Power. I knew they got more callers on there, but I'm sorry for being so long, but I had to come out strong.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great. No, you're coming through great. Appreciate you, brother. Keep the fire burning. It's young brothers like you that keep this movement going and thriving, brother. Black Power.
Black power, brother.
Yeah, that's code of thug life is something that got to be explored as we go forward in talking to our youngsters out there in the street. And we want you all to know about that more. We'll be talking about that. Let's go to another call here. Your area code is 347-884. 347-884, you're on live with Black Power Radio. We're talking about 21st century slaves. How do we get free? Black Power, welcome.
Hey, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power.
How you doing? This is Icy. Listen, I was just listening, and most of the time I listen, and sometimes I speak, sometimes I don't, but a situation like this, I really thought that I should speak, because a lot of our people would say, oh, boycott the Clippers, and before anybody start pulling up signs and rallies and want to do protesting, like, we should really look at, like, a lot of other nations, what a lot of other nations would do at this present time. They might just follow that. You know, they might just take his words, receive what he said, see how he really feels about us, and begin to either sponsor our own people, especially our youth, to become owners of basketball teams, or the brothers that's in the basketball teams now, instead of them buying cars and spending their money frivolously and buying cars and so many houses with so much money, they could put their money aside and begin to own their own teams.
True. That's true. That's the solution that Brother Larry Johnson has out there right now in organizing an all black professional basketball league. That's his very solution that he's got out there right now.
And that's the only solution for that. Because, I mean, what, to get mad at him because he said something about black people? Most of us black people can't stand each other ourselves, so there's nothing different.
The disrespect of self and the self-hatred of self does allow for some racists to give their opinion, but I still say that they are going to think what they think, but we got to do for ourselves, and we have to build for ourselves. You know, we know that they're going to be themselves. We know that they're going to do what they're going to do. I mean, you look at this scenario with Cleveland Bundy. You heard about that and that rancher out there in Nevada, and he had been having a standoff with the sheriffs and all kind of deputies and stuff out there like that, and he comes out in the media now with this vitriol, these racist comments against black people, talking about Negroes are better off as slaves and picking cotton. I mean, I'm talking about, this is 2014. I'm trying to tell
you,
2014.
But you know, what I'm saying,
attitude is still there.
Being in New York, where like a predominantly, a lot of black people from everywhere here, and like it's a great mixture. I mean, I really have to honestly say, one of our least focuses, our very last struggle right now is what they have to say about us.
Okay, go ahead. Speak
on
that.
I'm just saying, that's like our very last struggle. Because, to be honest with you, the ones that really don't want you to get hired, the ones that really treat you like crap, the ones that really talk about you is us. We do it to us. They don't have nothing to do with that because, to be honest with you, if you go to job interview right now and it's a white person, a lot of times that white person just might give you a chance. But let it be one of you. You're going to go through hell trying to get hired by your own. So, and even if they do hire you, they treat you like crap. So one of our very last struggles right now is about what they have to do. If we don't love ourselves, if we can't do some in-house cleaning, you know, spiritually and economically within ourselves, there's nothing you can't expect somebody else that's looking on the outside to respect you if you don't respect yourself, and that's what we're facing right now.
And that's a valid point. Make sure that you include in that analysis that it all starts with white supremacy and white racism. And when you begin to take that away from the equation of why black people treat ourselves the way that we do, or in your case in New York, while the different nationalities are at war with each other, and the Haitians say, well, I ain't this, and this one say, I ain't that, and this one says, I ain't none of that. You got to look at who told us, sister, that we were all different. Who told us that, you know, that they would separate the light skin from the dark skin and the Creole from this one and that one, and who would separate the one with the thin nose from the one with the broad nose? It go back to the white man. The white man taught us that. We didn't teach ourselves that.
So
and
I
go
understand
back to
that.
Internalized
I understand
racism.
That, I understand that, but the question is how long are we going to keep saying that? Because right now, through Marcus Garvey, through Khalid Muhammad, through so many different teachers, Elijah Muhammad, through so many of them teaching us, we know that already. So how long are we going to keep saying that before we decide, okay, you know what, well, let's separate from them, let's come together with a concrete plan, and let us stop hating each other the way that we do. What? How long are we going to? We can't keep blaming that white man forever.
We can blame the white man as long as the white man deserves that blame, but that doesn't mean that we don't take action. See, you got to look at Garvey. Garvey, you're talking about a man who had 10,000 strong. Okay, Garvey,
right.
Boats, Garvey, banks, Garvey, food, restaurant. Garvey had that. I'm talking about
right.
had it. Okay,
right.
But what happened to Garvey? Garvey was attacked by the white man, straight up. Okay, so, I mean, you know, we can dance around it and try to, as Dr. Collins say, not place the blame where the blame belongs. But I don't want us to get in the habit of saying it's just us, because again, my sister, if we completely deal with us and don't deal with the rule of white supremacy, which makes us do the things that we're doing, we would never ever get to where you're trying to get us to. If we turn right now, if the black nation turns right now and attacks everything black, everything in terms of the issues that are going on with our people, you would still have to deal with the root cause of what put us there in the first place, which is
right.
white supremacy and white racism. And so that's what I'm saying. It ain't just a thing where it's just us. Let's get ourselves together. Let's pick ourselves up, because we've been doing that. Sis. I mean, like you said, all them teachers that came, male and female, all those great followers. We talked about the movement early in the intro, where they were living amongst themselves, eating right, taking care of their babies. They just wanted to separate from the regulars, you know, in the society. They wanted to be their own nation, their own people, and live that natural life. And even in trying to do that, the state used a black man named Wilson Good to drop a physical bomb, and blow up men, women, and children. You go back to the history of Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, okay, where we had the lawyers, we had the mayors, we had the doctors, we had the establishments, we had the economics together. And what happened? We got ourselves together, and the white man got jealous and dropped a bomb again on Black Wall Street. You cannot get away from what I'm saying, that you have a real opposer out here. That when we get ourselves
yeah,
together,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I know he's still our opposer, but there's
can't
no
get away
way.
From it.
There's no way that we can confront him if we don't confront us first. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, but that's what we're doing with the movement. The movement is designed to confront our people in a way that exposes who put us in this condition. See, that's what I'm saying. Like when you got people every week trying to say, no, look at yourself, you, what's wrong with you? That's like the brother or sister who's coming up as a youngster, and all they hear is, you ain't no good, you just like your daddy, you ain't nothing. Mm-hmm. And all they hear is negative information concerning themselves, and they never hear the good information. Well, what I'm saying is the movement is challenging us to look at our greatness. The movement is making us look at our opposers. It's making us clean up. And I'm one of them kind of brothers where if we're not interested in cleaning up, and as we say, as Minister Malcolm said, waking up, cleaning up, and standing up, I'm not interested in a movement like that. I don't want people to come to the new Black Panther Party and then they be filthy. They be mentally filthy, morally filthy. They be economically filthy. And then 5 years down the road, after still being with us, they still in the same condition. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Right, that's what we have to look at, because I mean, unfortunately, I mean there's something like that here. There's something like that everywhere. But what I'm saying is, like, for us, like, to really even be able to stand against the white man, we have to do in-house cleaning first. Because
true.
Even when you read the Bible, right, when we were doing right, we were able to defeat our enemies. But when we started doing wrong, our enemies started defeating us. And what
That's
I'm
right.
saying is, if we come together first, we look at ourselves first, we clean up spiritually, economically, any kind of way, first, we clean up ourselves, then we need to confront them. But please, I'm pretty sure there's to every one statement that Donald Sterling said, there's 10 young brothers that call each other nigga before they shoot them. So, I mean, we really have to look at us first.
True. No, that's true. That's very true. And I don't, like I'm saying, I don't condone that at all. All I'm sitting there saying to you, sister, is that them brothers and sisters who are calling each other nigga before they kill each other, that mind was put in there by the white man, period. The education system, or the lack of education, as Carter G. Woodson talked about, that's what put them there. That is why other children are not doing that. That's why it's not happening in other cultures, because other cultures' children have not been miseducated like our babies have. Our babies were the ones that were taught to hate themselves and taught that we were nothing and taught that we were just slaves and picking cotton, like this Cliven Bundy said, we were better off as slaves just picking cotton. It's our babies that they go through this. No, you can't compare it to other cultures, because other cultures have not faced this kind of trauma. They have not faced that. And so you got to kind of deal with it from a different perspective. Even though we hate it, even though it's nasty, even though, you know, we don't like it, you got to deal with it from a real perspective that we are on automatic remote control. Why is it that in New York, in D.C., in Philadelphia, in Florida, in Texas, in California, in Oregon, wherever you go, the black community damn near looks exactly the same? Why do you think that is, sister? Why does it look exact? Why are we doing the same thing? We might have different we might have different accents. We might have different what they call swagger about us, whatever. You know, we might have all of that. But why does the black community predominantly look the same in every city in America? Because we have the same mindset. We've been given the same mindset, and we've been given the same programming through television, radio. It's the same thing.
Right.
So we can undo it. We can undo
it. Only thing that we could do is educate, especially on our babies. I mean, right now I'm on a personal break right now, but besides that, usually that's my thing. I educate our babies, and I'm not gonna say it's easy, because sometimes like the babies' minds are so far that they don't wanna actually listen. But some of them, they do know and they listen. But the best thing that we could do is educate them, because it doesn't make sense to make them rich and they don't know what to do with their money. Like, I was watching a show the other day, and they were talking about these actors and these, you know, producers and stuff, and how much money they had, but the money that, what they spent their money on was stupid. And it's like,
right.
You know, so what we have to do is educate our babies. We don't need a march. We don't need a protest. We don't even need, you know, like, what we need to do is look at what he said, see that he don't like us, begin to own our own, begin to educate our babies on who we truly are. Forget what Bundy said or whatever, but educate us and let us know who we truly are. Let them know that, you know what, King Tut was a 10-year-old pharaoh. Let them know things like that. Like, you know what, don't worry about how young you are. Look at the power that you have, because your ancestors' blood is in you.
It's and a good wake-up call. It's what our elders call a teachable moment. I don't want to say forget it, because you're talking about generations of young black men and women who didn't go through the civil rights era. They didn't go through the early black power phase. They were never Jim Crow. They would, you know, they were never kept out of places. And so, you know, stuff like this serves as a stark reminder of what is at the core of America. You got to understand that America promises a dream every day, that if you go to school, if you work a job, that you'll end up in the position of
which
a Donald Sterling. You see what I'm saying? And
so
this is a wake-up call that you still black in America, that you still have to struggle in America, that you are still underappreciated, undervalued, that your forefathers and mothers built this entire country and you reap none of the benefits, and that the struggle is still on. That's the importance of a Donald Sterling in this hour. That's the importance of a Cleveland Bundy in this hour. Mm-hmm. It's not that we want to harp on it and just dwell on it and say that's what we're going to stay at, we ain't going to do nothing for ourselves. No, this should be the motivation. This type of stuff should be straight motivation and fuel, and it happens amongst our own too. You know, I don't know if you heard this or you all heard this story out of Texas, but a woman named Felicia Smith, she's 42. Felicia Smith, she's a teacher at Stovall Middle School out of Houston. And she got charged with what they call an improper relationship with the student. And what she did, she gave this student a lap dance for his birthday, a birthday lap dance in front of the entire class. And I want to add that it was also videotaped. Now, this is a black woman. I want to be clear. When I'm talking about automatic remote control and 21st century slaves and the sickness of living amongst these people and living amongst, this craziness, Felicia Smith took a student, I think he was 16, if I'm not mistaken, 15, 16, somewhere in there, and she's giving him a lap dance at Stovall Middle School in front of the entire class. And then they said when she finished, she says to the young man, "I love you, baby." Now, this is the kind of sickness we're talking about dealing with self, and we're talking about a sickness of living
and, that's why
and coming up amongst white folks and coming up amongst their culture. This is what it produces, sister. It produces this.
But it's us. It's us. No white man didn't go to her and tell her to lap dance with no boy.
Who taught her how to do it? Hey, you got Miley Cyrus and all them running around twerking their behinds off right now. She reinvigorated a whole twerk movement and throughout America. And that's not that sister's natural state. You know in her right mind, she would not do that if she was in her right mind. Because you in your right mind, sister, you wouldn't do that, would you?
No, I sure wouldn't. But that's what I'm saying, that we gotta cleanse, cleanse ourselves spiritually. Like, I mean, I know white folks hate us, but I want the ones that don't, like, that's not from the north, but, like, from the south, like, I would love for y'all just to come here and just stay some time here just to see how we treat each other here.
It's still the same, my sister. It's the same thing that's going on in New York is what's happening in Africa right now. Is what your program talks about, called colonialism, or what's called today neo-colonialism. When you have a colonized people, they take on the habits of their oppressors. And so at one point where it was the plantation owner, the white man, or what they call the cracker on the plantation, who was putting his hate over on you, now it's you putting hate over on yourself. It's the same thing. You cannot get away from it. You have to go to the root of it. And going to the root of it, you will address the cause. But as long as you stay on the branches will always fall off, but the root will exist. So you got to take it from the root. The root is internalized white supremacy. The root is internalized white supremacy and self-hatred. I suffer from a lack of knowledge, that knowledge is a knowledge of self, who we are, what we're supposed to be doing, what we come from, what type of strength we really have as a people in unity with self-determination. That's what we're missing, sister, in America and throughout the world, even in Africa. That's what they're missing. They over there worshiping white deities, holding up in some circles gods that don't look anything like them because they were colonized and given a god by the white man. And so you cannot get away from that. I want to tell you, as I go to another call, you got to hold fast to the teachings of the new Black Panther Party, and don't be afraid to take that thing to the root of the problem. You're not being a racist. You're not being a hater for going to the root of the problem. If this happened in another community, let's flip the script. If black people came in and taught so-called Jewish children to hate themselves and to kill themselves, and if we taught them an education that erased them out of the history books and took away their accomplishments and took away their prestige and their greatness, and we went into their kingdoms and their rulerships and destroyed their libraries and hid their history from them, they would not be wrong for saying that we did that. They wouldn't be wrong for pointing the finger and putting the blame and calling it what it is, and they wouldn't be wrong for taking their children away from us and teaching them what really happened. So why is it wrong when black people say, you know, we're going to do it for ourselves? I got to take another call, my sister.
All right, Black Power.
Thank you so much. Power to you.
Interesting
comments there. We'll go here to 215-982. 215-982. You're here live with Black Power Radio. The topic is 21st century slaves. How do we recover? How can we recoup? Black Power, welcome.
Black Power, sir. This is Haruka Hootie, Philadelphia, and they give you a strong Black Power, the whole new Black Panther Party, and
Black Power.
Yes, sir. I was taken down when you made the announcement about the brother, the young brother that was shot and in critical condition in Philadelphia by the Philadelphia Pig Department.
Yes, sir.
That was my first time hearing about that, you know, and I started beating myself up, but then I went to the internet. I started making some phone calls trying to find out, you know, what's going on, you know, and then I'm thinking, how can I not hear about that? But anyway, that's not here nor there. I know I got work to do on that particular situation right there, because our young brother, 20 years old, as you said, you know, delivering pizza, working two jobs. He was working mm-hmm. two jobs trying to get through school, right? And then here come the plainclothes pigs going to attempt to take his life, going to shoot in his car 14 times. An innocent brother going to deliver a cheeseburger, you know, to a customer, right? I mean, and we going to say that we need to work on ourselves when our people are being attacked physically, mentally, and spiritually, economically, every which way, you know, that can be, you know, be it whether you're trying to go to school, trying to go to work, trying to feed your family, trying to do the things that you need to do, that we need to do, and then here comes the oppressor, you know, or it's a vicious thing going on right now, and you were talking about 2014 compared to 2014, right? I mean,
go ahead.
2014
I know what you
compared
mean.
To 1914.
Right? Right, I know what you mean.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so, I mean, come on. You know, how long are we going to keep on standing up and saying that, okay, let's look at ourselves? No. I mean, it's a time for everything. You know, sure, we got to look at ourselves. We always got to improve in ourselves and develop for self. You know, but don't forget what these devils is doing every day, each and every hour, every minute, every second. They robbing
the
us, still blind.
Yeah, yeah. The Honorable yeah. Dr. Khalid Muhammad taught us in the New Black Panther Party about Maat, which includes balance. And so, you know, we say it with balance. We understand automatically that before we can look externally at somebody or anything else, we have to look within ourselves, because we understand that if we took every white man off of the planet and woman off of the planet right now, if there were no white people, we would still have problems. Let's be clear, in radio land, there would still be problems amongst our people. So let's just be honest. That we have a cleansing that we got to do amongst ourselves that has nothing to do with white people. And we have things that we have to do amongst our own community that has nothing to do with the Caucasian people. But that being said, right is right and wrong is wrong. And I'm saying when they do wrong, we got to call it like it is. When we do wrong, we got to call it like it is. And so we have to use Maat and be balanced. Of course, we must work amongst ourselves, but the evils that we have, I remember, our sister had mentioned the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I remember him saying that even the sins that the black people do are not even our own sins. We didn't even teach ourselves to do wrong. We're coming from a righteous people up out of Kemet, Nubia, Kush, and other areas. We had already had governments. We had already had law. We had already had things established for righteousness and righteous living. And then you come amongst this people, and then we integrate amongst the people, and that people taught us how to do this evil. You didn't hear about black people going shooting up schools and killing their families and all kind of stuff until we became integrated. Those are just the facts. Those are just the facts. There were certain things in the black community that we did and certain things that we didn't do. There were things that we were able to separate ourselves from other cultures as. And today, because we're in their name, we're in their language, we're in their culture, we're in their religions, it is identical. We are doing damn near the same thing that they are doing, and worse. See, we can do it worse to ourselves because we know ourselves. You see what I'm saying? We can harm ourselves because we're closest. But I just want to make it clear that people always attack whatever's closest to it. You know, we're failing to mention in talking about black-on-black violence, we're failing to mention white-on-white violence. White people kill white people all the time. The Italians kill Italians. The Jews kill Jews. The so-called Jews killed so-called Jews. Whoever killed whoever. You know, people kill whoever's closest to them. And so in that type of analysis, because we're talking about poverty, because we're talking about self-hatred, because we're talking about lack of a decent education or a lack of a knowledge of self, our people, because we cannot properly get at those who put us in this condition, those who are the elites, those who make the laws, those who are at the top, and we attack ourselves. And that's just the reality. But the story of this brother, Philip Harlan,
yes,
out of Philadelphia, it hurts me and pains me because this is another case of a black man doing what he, quote-unquote, is supposed to do. Okay, he wasn't coming out of no store with no bags. He wasn't coming out of somebody's window. He wasn't raping no sister. He wasn't doing none of that. He working his job. And simply working your job in America can get you killed or darn near killed. So, yes, sir, brother. Haru, this is something that you have to get on right away.
Most definitely.
You have to organize everybody in Philadelphia on this issue. I mean, ASAP. No sooner than you hang up this phone, you got to get busy right away and take the vanguard position on this, and we expect some results out of Philadelphia and the Philadelphia Pig Department there, because not only do they owe his family and owe him, they owe the black community. The black community takes this personal. See what I'm saying? You got to take that personal. They owe the black community, and they are patrolling our community. The Panthers told you and told us 40 years ago we wanted the police to withdraw from the community. We wanted them to be withdrawn from the community, or they had to live amongst the community. And because the people did not take that, now you have the occupying militarized army of the police there that are executing black men and women in the streets. And so the fight is still the same, and the fight is on a higher level even, that we have to push for our own defense force in our own community, and we will have to be able to check, and even in some cases in self-defense, chin check the pigs when they do things like this. So, brother, we'll be listening for your reports over the next 24, 42 hours, and I know you'll keep us updated, but we're going to put the fire on for Brother Philip Harlan and all the other Philip Harlans out there that don't make the news. This is just one that made the news. You see what I'm saying? This is one that was reported. But there's no telling how many other cases go unreported and unmentioned that never get this type of attention. So we got to fight, brother.
All right, sir. I'm with you. And definitely I'm on my boots on the ground here in Philadelphia, and I'm going to be doing everything that we're supposed to do in a situation like this. You know, black power.
All right. Black power. You the man. You the man to do it. Brother Haru Kahuti, regional representative right there. He's based in Philadelphia. He going to get on it. Let me go to another call here. Error code 971-506-971-506. You're on live with Black Power Radio, and we're talking about 21st century slaves. How do we recoup? How can we recover? Your thoughts, your questions. Come on in. Welcome, and black power to you.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Welcome. Black Power.
Hi. I was going to talk about the different scholars on black history and black sociology.
Okay, you got a few seconds. Come on with it.
Henry Louis Gates wrote an encyclopedia, and he said most people in Brazil are of African descent, and others like and wrote many encyclopedias and books, and I'll talk about some of them. One guy, a white guy, he's a historian, and then there's Guadalupe Chuan. He's a white Mexican anthropologist, and he says blacks, African Mexicans, the infamous Mexicans became the majority of today's mestizos in Mexico. And that's really interesting to a lot of scholars that know Henry Louis Gates and other people.
Okay, keep going. What are you saying here? I'm with you, but what are you saying to us?
There's a large population of people of color and different, people of different cultures that are similar to ours that people don't really notice every single day.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We're a firm believer in that. Again, the New Black Panther Party is a revolutionary Pan-Africanist organization, which means that we recognize the root of Africa in black people throughout 196,940,000 square miles. Our program talks about that we recognize the freedom for the oppressed, black, brown, red nations. You know, we for melanated people. You know, we understand. You know, we are familiar with the struggles of the brown berets and the struggles of third world people. We understand all of that. The struggles of the Zapatistas, we understand the connection. We understand that, you know, because, again, Africa ruled the world. Africa governed the world from right there at that base. And so we understand that, brother, and we understand that, you know, there are pyramids there and the Aztecs. And, you know, we know that, black man. What we have to do is unite. And the first type of unity that we must have is self-unity. Before I can worry about uniting with the brown man or uniting with the red man and red woman or uniting with the yellow man and yellow woman, I have to unite my people first. We got to have a united base of black people, Africans here in America that are united around common causes and common issues, because regardless to, you know, whether we do or whether we don't, the brown man and woman, they're still speaking their language. They're still, you know, even though they've gone through colonizations and they've gone through different wars and things like that, you know, with the beast, they still have their language and they still have strong remnants of their culture, the red man and woman, even though they've gone through the Trail of Tears. And you hear Sister Warrior Woman talking about that all the time, and Chief Ernie Longwalker and all of them, they're talking about the things that they've been through. They still can call themselves by their original names, and they know their original lineages. And, you know, many of them, even though they're displaced, they've been repositioned, and they've established themselves up in Big Mountain and other areas, you know, so they have all that. But you look at the average black man and black woman in America, and you ask them, well, where are you from, you know, who are you connected to? And many of our people can't trace their lineage back past two generations. They can't even tell you where they're from or what African clan their people come from. You know, they can't tell you what was one of the languages that their people spoke, or, you know, who were the great warriors in their family or lineages. They don't know. We don't know, because as Minister Malcolm X had explained 40-something years ago, our history was destroyed in slavery. And, you know, the white man did their best. They did their best to make sure they hid the tracks of who we were. And if we did not have the great geniuses of our forefathers and foremothers who come up out of Nubia and Kush and our great times in Kemet and other areas where they put our history in the sands and in the stones, you know, the manuscripts and the papyrus, if we didn't have that, we would not have a clue as who the hell we are at all. We wouldn't even know if we didn't have the manuscripts that were brought to us and sent to us to remind us of what type of people that we come from and, you know, what we really are and who we really are. We would have no clue, my brother. And so, you know, it's very relevant. The unity of melanated people throughout the world is relevant. And, of course, that makes us even stronger in numbers. But always remember that you have to do as Marcus Garvey taught, which was race first. You got to go for the race first and other second.
XNL. XNL.
Yes.
Hello?
Say what, sir? Yes.
XNL.
Say
Transpanel? Hello?
You go right ahead. Last point.
I was studying. I found some white scholars talk about Europe And Vasily Kretchevsky, a Russian, said the average Russian since 1960 is a brown African thin. His blood has been diluted with the white Slav, and he's been mixed with the Mongol, so he's been diluted, and his blood is not as strong as it used to be. But that's, Kretchevsky says that's the main Slavic type in Russia, but it's called a thin.
And that's a person, you said, who hasn't been diluted, white blood?
Their blood has been diluted, like some of the Puerto Ricans and some of the Mexicans are of African descent. Their blood has been diluted, and they're light, some more light skin.
Good. Well, we need a whole bunch of them. We need a whole bunch of them that's just straight up pure. They ain't got a damn trace of white blood in them, and all of that history from their ancestors in that blood. We need a whole bunch of them. So tell them to get in contact with us.
One last thing.
We got to take some more calls. We got to move you forward. But I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you so much. You stay on top of that. I think this is my brother Michael, Brother Michael West, and you. I know that you're very passionate. I know you're very passionate about the international linkings of the black man and the brown man and the black man down into Peruvia and all that. So you stay on top of that, brother, because one day you're going to put that into a package. I know you're going to put that into a package that we can really use, huh?
I was following scholars like Henry Louis Gates and Pai and other people. I looked at their studies and then Kretchevsky and others. That's what I was doing.
Good. Well, you keep looking at that. Keep looking at Dr. Chancellor Williams. Keep looking at Dr. Ivor Van Sertima. Keep looking at Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Jim James. There's a lot that you can go through. And, of course, we appreciate the contributions of Dr. Henry Louis Gates. Henry Louis Gates, doctor, you just got to come stronger. You got to come stronger, Dr. Henry Louis Gates, and stop trying to water down so much. Dr. Khalid Muhammad used to be on Dr. Gates, Brother Michael. He used to say, who in the hell left the gate open? We got to take another call, Black man. Appreciate you, Black Power. Next call here, your area code is 502-337-502-337. You're on live Black Power Radio. We're talking about 21st century slaves. How can we recoup? How can we recover? Talk to us. Your thoughts, your comments. Welcome, Black Power. Area code 502-337. Can you hear me? Your microphone is open. Question or comment? All right. I'm just here to tell you, brothers and sisters, it's no time to go to sleep. I was gonna make some points on that brown unity out there. I'd seen it come across a story where there was some brown sister who had stood up pretty strong. But we'll come back to that. I don't want you all to lose the point of that sister lap dancing on that teenager there, Texas, Houston, Texas. That sister, man, poor sister and poor brother, man. I'm telling you, we have lost our minds in North America. We have lost our minds. Dr. Khalid used to tell you all the time, by the way that we act, we have even lost our minds. But I'm here to tell you that it can be recovered. We can recoup. Now, I'm with the idea for Larry Johnson. I like your idea, sir, of an all-black basketball league, but I don't want to just stop at a black basketball league. I think we should go beyond a black basketball league. That's, sports and entertainment, that is what that is. But we should be able to have an all-black everything. We can rebuild Black Wall Street, bigger than what it is. Black mayors, black attorneys, black laws for black people. We can have what the new Black Panther Party talks about, the Republic of New Africa talks about, which is a plebiscite for black people, territory and land of our own, which is carved out for us. We got to have land that is carved out for us, that is fertile and minerally rich. You got talking about Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and all of those fertile, minerally rich lands black people could have for ourselves. And I know that for some of you super integrationists, you cannot fathom a lifestyle outside of what's provided by 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and the programming departments. You cannot fathom not being the white man's nigga and controlled by them. But for those of you who understand that other cultures who could not get along in peace with other people, and they were being killed in the streets like our children are being killed in the streets, and they were hunted down and warehoused and all of that, that we go through, that those of you who know that those people separated and built territories and lands of their own, we should do the same for ourselves. We don't have to go begging white people for anything. We don't have to beg white folks for anything. Our ancestors already paid the cost. They already paid the cost. The cost has been bought and paid. They paid it. We don't have to beg for a damn thing. We just have to state the case and the demand and organize our power behind the demand. I heard Minister Farrakhan talking about that a couple of days ago, and he's 81. A couple of days ago talking about that at the reparations conference. You got to have some power behind the demand. It can't just be frivolous talk, and the frivolous talk has gotten us nowhere. The frivolous talk has produced what's happening in Philadelphia and what's happening with Texas. It's re-strengthened the minds of the Clive and Bundys and the Donald Sterlings and the other ones out there that tell you to your face that they hate you. It has strengthened them. The talk is getting us nowhere. Too many damn lectures all over the place. The lecture circuit is getting us nowhere. Where are the people who are concerned about owning some things, owning some land, territory that is ours? Can you envision it? Can you envision your own flag, the red, the black, and the green, up on the pole that represents your nation, the blood for the African, and the black for black people, and the green for the land? So you got to have a vision. Enough of the talk, enough of the cheap stuff, because that's getting us killed out here. We're dying in the streets, and these babies know it, and they know that most of you are too damn cowardly to get up off of your couch and your fat behind to go out here and do something for them. And I'm telling you, if you're in the new Black Panther Party with that kind of attitude, you're not going to last long, not this time around. Not going to be out here posing and taking all these camera shots and all this press conference here and a press conference there. You ain't did a damn thing but conference. Hell no. We're going to use it effectively, but we got to be in the streets. Got to be in the streets. You can only judge the new Black Panther Party by what it does for the black community in relation to black people. We can only hold ourselves accountable to what we have listed as a 10-point program and platform. And so we're going to drive. I'm telling you this, we're going to drive. You have to represent for Philip Holland. You have to represent for Trayvon. You have to represent for Renisha McBride. You have to represent for Jordan Davis. You have to represent because it's clear that other organizations have sold out. NAACPLA trying to give a lifetime achievement award to Donald Sterling, who damn near called you nigger to your face. Okay? Organizations sold out and punked out, and the NBA players, brothers, just don't know what to do. They don't know what to do. They're so discombobulated. They turned their jerseys inside out and just threw the damn things on the floor at the logo. We got to show them how to organize, and we got to show black people how to organize in the streets. And so I want you all to make sure that you call this number. You make sure that you call 347-903-0886. 347-903-0886 is the way to reach us at our headquarters. And we're not done yet. I just wanted to give you all that because I know that we shift gears the second half. You know, we go to two halves. I'm going to give you all a break and give you a second to get you some juice. If you need to eat, some of you all just getting off of work, working at late night shift. Some of you all just kick back listening live with Black Power Radio. But look, on 10:30, at 10:30, the 10:30 hour, we'll come back with hopefully our national chairman who is traveling right now. He's on his way back, and he's been moving around with the rapper Lil Bootsy, and he's dealing with these NBA players, and he's organizing them, and we want to get them on live. We're going to hear also from Brother Mark with Black Paralegals for Justice and Brother Leonard Rowe, who is locked down now, incarcerated. He's supposed to call in, and we're going to hear what's happening with him as they've moved on him because he put liens on some houses that belonged to some Jews, and they said, hell, if you take the liens off, we'll let you out of jail. He said, hell no. He's a personal friend to Michael Jackson. He has exposed what really happened to Michael Jackson, wrote a whole book on it, how them bastards benefited off his death, and it was a whole setup and all of that. We're going to hear from him and a whole lot more at 10:30. So you all who are online now, call back in at 10:30. We'll take a 30-minute break to stretch and relax and get our thoughts together after everything we process here, and we'll come back for the second half of Black Power Radio. Others of you, drop us a line at newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com, and our website is newblackpanther.com. We're coming right back at you in a few moments. Be with us. Black Power.
I'm going to get a name to Eric. No, Papa, yes, Lee. I want you to suck out rough and tough. I know your rules from here, because them can't cross the border. Don't get yourself in a black seat. Hear me now. Conquer it's a cleric, conquer insect, lyric, another man. It's a cleric, conquer insect, lyric, phenomenon. It's a cleric, conquer insect, lyric. It's a cleric, conquer insect, lyric. Them keeping a dance, say hand that.